Blog Talk Radio.
Damn. See? That's one of the main things I'm talking about, you know what I'm saying? Good versus evil. Crazy killer.
Good versus evil, which one are you? Evil versus good, what should you do? Evil versus good, what can you say? Good versus evil, what are you today? Today it's all good. I woke up in my hood. Yeah. I'm walking down the street and I'm up to all good. Like I picked up a cat out.
Damn.
Woo. Hey, hey. I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. Well, Ray. Let me. Oh, man. It's good to be back on a Friday. We got a lot to get involved in. Let me give everybody the information. First off, if you want to call in, it's 718-664-9098, and you can reach us here at Blog Talk Radio, okay? If you want to check us out online, you can check us out at Facebook, like our page, Ray and Tay Today. At Twitter, we are at Ray, RAEANDTAYTODAY, Ray and Tay Today. And also, you can email us some questions. You know, we've got some stuff from some people. People are checking us out everywhere. And rayandtaytoday@gmail.com is the place for you to ask your questions, whether it's fantasy, whether it's about where you at things. We got a new segment today talking about the top five, whatever it is. So just get involved with us. And also, if you want to go straight to the website, it is blogtalkradio.com/rayandtaytoday.
There you go. And just to remind people, for you regular callers and listeners, thanks a lot for your support. We really appreciate it. For you first-timers, welcome. Just to give you some quick background, I'm Ray, and that was Tay talking, and we've been doing this for 30 years, sports talk. So now we figured we'd put it on the radio. We talk NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, college sports. We've got a little bit of an urban edge. We come from New York. So we just wanted to share this with family and friends. If you listen to the show, if you like the show, then you're part of the family. So this can be as interactive
and
as
strangers.
You want it to be. And strangers, exactly. But you become part of the family, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
talking
this can be as interactive.
Friends, baby.
Yeah, it can be as interactive as you want it to be. You can call, you can send us a tweet, you can email us, or you can just sit back and listen. If we provide you some enjoyment listening to sports, breaking up your day, sports heels, you know, just come in and join us. We try to do it an hour a day, an hour an episode. We try to do 2 to 3 times a week. So look for us, like Eric said, on all of those social media sites and on Blog Talk Radio. Today's show, we've got a quick amount of breaking news we'll go through. We'll talk about yesterday's Chicago-Green Bay game.
Oof.
We'll go into a little college. A couple of top 25 matchups. We'll talk a little bit about the five best pro matchups, and then talking about five, we got our new segment now, Top five
today. Fridays.
Woo! And today we're going to do top five quarterbacks of all time. This is a passing league, so let's start putting the current quarterbacks in perspective. Where do they rank in the top five of all time?
Well, if they rank, that's the real question. Could they possibly rank? So we're going to do top five of all time right now, and that's for, you know, retired players, everything. So we'll really get involved with that one and talk it up or whatever. So you know what? I want to break in, obviously, the big news of yesterday, and we're going to talk about it today. Retirement of the coach of the UConn Huskies, Jim Calhoun, a college basketball legend. I believe he had 873 wins. 3 NCAA championships, and some great NBA players he's put in there, and now one who's taken over for him, who played 13 years in the pros and coaching UConn, replacing him, Kevin Ollie. I mean, listen, the media didn't always like him, you know, Ray, but I got to say, man, he held down the Big East. He built up a school, a whole campus, a whole program that basically had nothing. So shout out to Calhoun. He's going to be missed, and, you know, yeah, he might have cheated a little bit, but he cared about basketball. We can't say academics, but he cared about basketball, and he did a great job.
Yeah, and like we keep saying, he built up the Big East when Connecticut had nothing. They had no assets. They were in Storrs, Connecticut, in a dump of a facility, and they didn't have a recruiting pipeline. And think about the teams that they were surrounded by, right? You know, BC and St. John's and Syracuse. And then if you go farther away, you got Georgetown and Seton Hall and Providence. I mean, these are teams that in the 80s, if you remember, as we do, the Big East was at its best, was at its highlight, at its pinnacle.
Yeah, he came in at 86, and he got it going, you know.
Three national championships. That's more than everybody in the modern era that's coaching now, except for Mike Krzyzewski. I mean, he's got as many as Bobby Knight. He's got more than Dean Smith. He's got more than Roy Williams. This guy's unbelievable. And doing it all in Storrs, Connecticut, is the biggest coup of it all.
Yeah, no, definitely we pay respects to him and, you know, wish him well with his health and his family. And then we move on to two little quick NBA notes. Number one, for those who don't know, and, you know, I'll shout out my boy Edgar Burgos, who works for the Knicks, and, I do Hard to Guard Radio with him, and Edgar knows a lot about the Knicks on the inside. And he had told me this summer, he was like, yo, Eric, Amari Stoudemire and Chandler are going to go down to Houston and work with Hakeem Olajuwon. Well, I guess it turned out so good that now the Knicks have hired Olajuwon. He will be in the Knicks training camp up at Greenberg, New York, to work with all the big men in the post game for all the players, whether it's a three like Melo, the four, Amari, Chandler, all those guys, Camby. So congratulations to the Knicks, because Hakeem, the dream of Olajuwon, is one of the illest post players ever.
I want every
game. You know that's your man, Ray.
That's my man. I want since when they were calling him Hakeem Abdul Olajuwon at the University of Houston as part of Phi Slamma Gemma. I want every Nick out there to get that little shake and bake drop step move that Hakeem had. Woo! Hakeem and Kevin McHale. I mean, those two guys were really unstoppable in the post. But kudos to the Knicks for getting him out of Houston, bringing him up to New York, and having him work with the players.
I think it's going to be fantastic. And then looks like the Lakers are reporting that Howard, and this is no surprise, probably won't be ready for a training camp. So, you know, I mean, that, I think that's, you know, everybody sort of expected that, his back surgery. And not that big of a deal. Maybe he misses the first couple of games.
Yeah, this is an 82-game season, so it's less urgent than last year when they only played 66 games. He'll be back. He'll be back.
Right, and you'd rather him healthy for the long haul.
Of course.
So, I'd say, well, let's jump into some college football. You know, we talk about everything on the show, like Tal said, and we got a couple of big games this week. The college football season, you know, the first couple of weeks, there's a couple of big matchups. Obviously, Bama, Michigan, and Bama just smoked them, which, you know, definitely hurt T and I, but Ray and I. But I got to say that right now, you start to get ranked teams starting to play each other, and then you're going to start to get in your own conference games. So you got obviously Florida, Tennessee. I think one of the biggest games is USC Stanford. Matt Barkley, the quarterback, has not beat Stanford yet. So what do you think is going on with him in that game, T? What's going on with USC this year?
That's his last chance to beat Stanford, and he's finally got some thoroughbreds on his team. I mean, Marquise Lee and Robert Woods on the outside. I mean, those are pro prospects. They'll be playing on Sundays eventually.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then the kid Silas Red, the transfer from running back from Penn State. I just think USC's got too much firepower, and they got 3 years. They've lost them, I think, four out of the last five. So they got a lot of built up frustration.
But obviously, Luck is gone. I mean, Andrew Luck is gone. So. Things
literally
have changed.
And
I think,
figuratively, the luck is gone. I think.
Yeah, the luck is gone. So I think USC could, you know,
actually,
they'll probably put it on them. I could see like 30-13. USC is going to put it on them pretty good. They got a lot of speed, USC. I mean, that's one thing Kiffin has been able to, you know, continue to recruit, you know, like our boy up at Seattle did. And I really feel USC is going to dominate.
How
I think
nice
the most,
is it? How nice is it for Lane Kiffin to be a coach in his 30s, getting the USC program, and then have his dad, the legend Monty Kiffin as his defensive coordinator.
Oh, you know,
usually from the
great Tampa Bay teams.
The Tampa
Monty
2,
Kiffin.
Yeah. That's amazing. When you're a young, you know, head coach to
yeah,
get.
Yeah, I think he's probably early 40s now, but he came in late 30s at USC, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's got to be a dream come true. It's amazing. And then, you know, have your dad coach with you. That's just crazy. But
yeah,
what's interesting is this Notre Dame-Michigan State game, number 20 in the nation against number 10 Michigan State in the nation. And Mike Golick and Magic Johnson have a bet on the game, so I think that's going to be kind of funny to see what happens with that. And, you know, if Michigan State wins, you know, he gets to host the show, and then Golick's got to go to the Dodger Stadium and get down fly balls and batting practice wearing the Michigan State gear. So that's kind of hilarious. And we're all about comedy on our show, too. So I like Michigan State. I mean, obviously D'Antoni is a good coach. And I think that they do miss Kirk Cousins, but I do believe that the running game, you know, the quarterback stepped in. I forget the kid's name. But Michigan State, they've got some good defensive linemen. And I just don't know if Notre Dame could really move the ball on them.
I think that's the key matchup, though. Those two defensive ends, Golson and Rush, you know, and the freshman quarterback for Notre Dame, Everett Golson, I think he's in over his head. I think that Michigan State, first thing they need to do is stop tweeting, okay? Cut out the tweets, because after the Michigan game, there's a little too much tweet going on.
They're
so let's leave the tweeting alone. Let's work on playing, you know, playing the game. But I do think, have you seen their running back, Le'Veon Bell? I mean,
this is
unbelievable. He had
50
touches against, you know, we were talking about Earl Campbell. This cat was Earl Campbell. Like, he had 50 touches against Boise State. 44 carries and 6 catches out of the backfield. This guy.
Well, listen, and what's good about them is that, you know, obviously they have some continuity, you know, even with a different quarterback, but defensively, you know, a couple of receivers. But what they do have now is a great opportunity to be ranked higher than they've been in a while, to be a 10, to beat Notre Dame, and to potentially crack the top 10. And if they could run the table in the Big Ten this year, you know, that would be huge. And then Michigan State could obviously, you know, either play in the Rose Bowl or, you know, I don't know if they could play for a championship, but they could play for a top 5 seed maybe for the end of the year. And you just never know how it breaks, you know, what teams lose, who beats up on each other in the SEC. And plus, you don't know if Oregon winds up beating USC and then what happens with that whole mix. So, you know, Michigan State.
They have
to play
twice now. They finally have a Pac-12 championship.
Yeah, they would play twice. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, you know, we'll give me a little score. What are you thinking on Michigan State, Notre Dame?
I think Michigan State wins 31-13. I think it's a blowout.
Okay. Well, I had 30-13 on the USC game. What's your USC score?
My USC score is something similar. I think USC puts up 5 touchdowns. I think they win 35-21.
Okay. Well, I gotta say, I look at Michigan State, and I could see. I think it's gonna be Notre Dame will keep it close. I say 27-20. But listen, let's talk about what happened to my boy Jay Cutler. For those who got fantasy football and all that, last night, you know, the premiere of NFL Network's Thursday Night Football, yada, yada, yada. And my man Jay Cutler, I'm not upset with him per se, because the offensive line was kakapoo-poo stinky. It was ridiculous. But I got to say, you got to throw the ball away. An incomplete pass is better than 4 interceptions. And don't dance around and get sacked. Get rid of it. Get rid of the rock. I think Jay Cutler sometimes he's got like this Vic idea where he wants to move around and try to do so much. And it's like, but don't you think that Tice did a bad job in-game, like adjustments? You got to set some picks, some screens to get Brandon Marshall involved. Get him the ball. Obviously, they're double-teaming. They're cheating the safety over. Tremont Williams is on a man-to-man. They got the safety over coming over and Shields and the other guy coming to help. And then Woodson would shadow a little bit too. And they basically couldn't throw him the rock. You know, so,
well,
yes, you know, I mean.
No, guys, I agree with what you're saying. Brandon Marshall only had 2 catches for 24 yards, but he only had 5 targets. I mean,
that's
last week
saying.
He had 9. last week he had 9 catches. I'm actually less worried about Brandon Marshall because I think ultimately he's going to get double teamed. He might have to be used as a decoy for some parts of the game. But this was a full offensive collapse. I mean, you talk about Manny being Manny. This is Jay being Jay. Every so often, every third, fourth, or fifth game in his career,
and
that's
space,
why he's inconsistent, he does, yeah, it's like he checks out. He wants to win the game, as you could tell by how he bumped into Wes Lineman and you know, kind of gave a little elbow. But we'll talk about that later. That's a lack of professionalism.
Lack of leadership. He's
leadership,
a child.
Yeah.
Very immature.
But 4 interceptions, not throwing the ball away. But I think everybody broke down. Mike Tice didn't call the right plays. I thought the offensive line got beat physically and probably got beat mentally too. I thought the running backs didn't help. I thought the play calling wasn't there. And then
horrible.
The buck stops at the quarterback, though. Again, 4 interceptions. And the worst part is now he has a reputation in the league. So if you listen to ex-Packers and even Charles Woodson after the game said, you know, Jay Cutler's one of those guys that 4 or 5 times a game he's going to give you a chance to pick him off. So the other team is fully expecting it. So it's about time that Jay, I mean, at what point can you say he needs to mature into, I mean, he's a veteran. He's been in the league since Vanderbilt and then went to Denver and now Chicago. But he just has these games. He just checks out. Manny being Manny in baseball and Jay being Jay in
football. Yeah, but I got to say this. First of all, I got a beef with the refs or whatever. Just for fantasy purposes, I got to say it. The last interception was not an interception. And so how do they just, like, not review it when you have to review every turnover? And when you're watching the game, the replay, he scooped it and the ball hit the ground. He didn't really catch it. So to me, you know, and even for his own records and stats of interceptions, let alone for him as my fantasy football quarterback, it was really 3 interceptions. So that kind of pissed me off. But I think the refs sometimes don't know the rules in the game. Like they sort of lose perspective. And it's time to get the real referees back. They haven't been over the top horrible, but they fumble enough stuff around that it's real sloppy and choppy. They mess up the game enough that most games don't have the rhythm so far in week one and the first game of week two that they should with the regular NFL referees. So
I'd agree with that. And one final comment on the game is that at least it didn't affect the outcome of the game. So even though fantasy-wise you got an extra interception, that's one thing. But second of all, just one quick comment about Aaron Rodgers. You know, he is not back to 2011 form yet. I mean,
no,
he did okay.
Yeah.
They scored 22 points. One of them was on special teams, so really they only scored, or 23, they only scored 16 on offense.
Well, how about the veteran, though? Donald Driver, Dancing with the Stars.
Yes,
he did the Lambo leap.
In the end zone, of course.
You know, I think they can't forget about him. I know Jennings was out, you know, in our league, coast to coast. Stacey Manley, man, he was sleeping. I know he's busy at work, but he had Jennings starting. He wasn't, you know, awake at the wheel. So he took an L with Jennings. But, you know, you still got to go to Driver. He's still good, and he's the heart of the team. You know, I think the Packers got to find a way to get him, you know, a catch or two a game and keep him involved, as well as bringing in, you know, Randall Cobb and some of these young guys. But, all right, so listen, we're about to jump into the next segment, and we'll be back on Ray and Tay Today.
So let's talk about this first game of the week. We got a great game, Baltimore at Philly. Baltimore coming off that great, impressive performance against Cincinnati. Philly laying an egg but winning against Cleveland. What are your thoughts on that game?
I got to tell you, I definitely have a lot of respect for Ray Lewis, Ray Ray, and the Baltimore Ravens. They don't have Suggs. You know, Ed Reed decided to come back and play. Their defense, I mean, we talked about it. They put the smack down on Cincinnati. I just think with Philly at home and the way that they pulled it together at the end, even though it was an ugly win against Cleveland, I got a funny, weird feeling that Philly, just because Vic is so mobile, and the Ravens don't always do good against mobile quarterbacks, and I think you can run on Baltimore. You can't always run up the middle on them, but you can run and sort of, you know, little off-tackle, little sweeps, different things. And I think McCoy with his screens and, you know, obviously passing to Celek and Harbor and some of the receivers, Macklin's banged up, Avant a little banged up, but it looks like everybody's going to play, DeSean Jackson. I just think Philly can pull it out 23-20 or 24-20, the Eagles. I think, you know, Flacco will have a good game. You know, I think Philly's defense will be able to get some pressure on him. But I just think Philly will be able to take it to, you know, 2-0, and the Ravens on the road just lose a close one.
See, I'm going the other way on that. I think it'll be a close game, but Baltimore wins. I think ultimately Macklin and Jackson, who are both questionable, one of them is going to get banged up in the game, take a hit from Ray Lewis or Ed Reed or somebody.
Them little guys.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately Baltimore's tough. I think Baltimore is a tough team, and they're road-tested, and they can play on the road. I think that Philly, despite the fact that I have them going 10-6, winning the NFC East, I think they lose this game. I think they lose this game at home. I think they get slapped around a little bit, but this is their wake-up call. I think that Baltimore goes in there and continues the momentum from week one.
Wow. Hey, let me ask you this real quick, Ray. You know what's interesting? We talk about T.O. and Chad Ocho a little bit, but there's the third guy in that mix, you know, and obviously Randy Moss is sort of the fourth, but he's playing. But the third guy who doesn't have a job is Plaxico Burress. Now, Plaxico might not have the breakaway speed, but with his height and jumping ability, he's a great, you know, red zone and end zone target and did very well for the Jets with, like, 8 touchdowns last year. I don't see why the Jets or the Eagles, Cowboys, certain teams, I don't see why they don't give Plaxico a chance. You know, he didn't really cause any trouble last year with the Jets or anything. I think he's, you know, trying to just do his job and do his business.
But the St. Louis Rams.
Or the St. Louis Rams, yeah, because to me, when I look at the Eagles, they got these little guys, Macklin, DeSean Jackson. Vic has got
Riley
no
Cooper
one to
got
throw
hurt.
To.
Riley Cooper got hurt, so he was a big...
Right, right, no, exactly. And then they have Avant, but they're all little guys. He has no one to throw to the goal line except for maybe Harbor and Celek. But you need a tall wide receiver on the outside to go, you know, go up and get a pass. It's nice when you got a guy 6'3", 6'4". Plax is tall, and I think, you know, it's a mistake for some of these teams, man. I'm really bothered by it.
Get him a job. Get our boy a job. I mean, I think three more. They could use him, especially when Jackson is banged up and Macklin is banged up. Bring him in. Bring in Plax. So, listen, we got a caller here. Maybe he wants to talk some football. So let's pull in our caller here. Hello, caller,
hey,
you're on the air. Ray and
what's up, Ray? What's up, Ray? What's up, Tay? What's going on? This is Hank.
What's up, man? What's going
hey,
on?
Hank.
Football Friday. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready. I am so ready. I got two questions for you. Okay.
All right, shoot.
The first one I know is going to encourage a debate, so I want to see you guys go at it. Is Jay Cutler Jeff George?
No, he's better. He's better. He's his better uncle. He's his better uncle.
Why?
Or
he
has
similar
physical tools,
yeah.
But I don't think he's as mentally fragile as Jeff George. Could you imagine Jeff George transferred as a freshman from Purdue to Illinois? I mean, who does that? So Jeff George,
especially back then.
Back then, yeah. Back from, I mean, who does that? Plus, the other thing is, Jay Cutler, as fragile as he is, at least he does put together 4 or 5 good games in between those 1 or 2 games that he just mentally checks out. So I hear what you're saying.
Hey, turn down your TV in the background, man.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
That's a Yankee game. That's a Yankee game, by the way.
All right.
0-0.
0-0. Thanks for the update.
Zero,
yeah, we
bottom,
need the Yankees
bottom,
to step up.
Yeah, we definitely.
Yeah, no. Jay Cutler's put together some better seasons. Jeff George, you know, whatever. But I see where you're going with it. But I think Jeff's a little bit better. I mean, Jay's a little bit better. Plus, Jay's been to an NFC championship. Jeff never made it to any AFC championships.
What's that second question? You want us to fire off with the second question?
The second question is, what is the bigger loss in games this week? Revis not playing or Polamalu not playing?
Ooh. It looks like Revis will play. We still
on
the latest.
He cleared out. He's out. He's officially listed as out.
Oh, so he didn't pass the test today?
No, he's out.
Okay. And Troy might be, a game time decision?
But assume he's out. I mean, the question is, who's a bigger loss if both of them are
out? I think it's going to be Revis because of the fact Ryan Clark is back. And he's going to, kind of hold down the Steelers. He's the glue at free safety, and they have some other cats that can step up for Troy, even though he's great with the stopping the run. But with Revis being out, that means Kyle Wilson has got to try to stick Wallace or Brown. And that's a tall order for Kyle Wilson.
Emmanuel Sanders on the nickel corner.
Yeah, normally what Wilson would be on. Emmanuel Sanders. So now to have him step up to Brown or Wallace, it's not going to be pretty. So losing Revis, where he could just shut down either Brown or Wallace and shut down, for the game potentially, that's going to give. And you know what? And with the Steelers offense, and it's great that you said, great segue, because that's the next game we're talking about, the Jets and Steelers. That is, exactly what's going to happen. The Steelers now are going to be more of a passing team until Mendenhall comes back. And so without Revis there, they're going to light the Jets up. They're going to light
okay.
the Jets
yeah,
up.
I think
you agree with that, Tom?
What's that?
You agree
that
with that?
That the Jets will get lit up? I fully agree. I think that the Jets scoring 48 was with smoke and mirrors. I mean, I think ultimately the league is going to catch up to the Jets. And the fact is the Jets, again, don't have playmakers. With all due respect to Stephen Hill and Sean Green, Mark Sanchez, who all played very well last week.
Yeah, what are you, in Compton? What's going on over there?
I know. It's ridiculous. It's called First Avenue.
Hey, New York City via Compton.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm running from
the
Fed Federal.
You got a ghetto bird over your roof?
Yeah, I'm running from the Fed Federal. It is ridiculous. Well, I'll sign off and let you guys continue.
All right,
I'm hoping
thanks for calling,
thanks for the call.
We appreciate it.
I'm hoping that there's a bet in between you guys for this Jets-Steelers game.
Well, we'll
anyway.
Definitely talk about it. And guess what? I got the Raiders 2013 over the Dolphins.
2013?
Yep.
Only 7 points? Ooh, okay.
Yep, that's it.
I'll take that.
All right.
Later, guys.
All right, Hank. Take care, man.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, man. So, and that's the next game we're reviewing. For me, T, I look at it like this. Yeah, the Steelers will run a little bit. Actually, look for Jonathan Dwyer to have a decent game, a little bit of Redmond. But I can honestly see, with Revis not there, Wallace, 5 for 80, Antonio Brown, like 6 for, 103, Sanders, 5 for 60. It's going to be close to 300-yard passing day for Big Ben. And I just don't know if the Jets can get enough pressure. And if they blitz, it's hard, number one, getting Ben down, but number two, He always can dodge the first blitzer and then get it to somebody. He doesn't have the high ankle sprain anymore like he did in the playoff game. So look for Steelers. I think they're gonna put a number on them. I think it's going to be 30-21, 30-23, so something like that.
I don't think the Jets can score 23 points. I'm a Jet fan, and if they can't score it on defense, I don't think they can score 23, and they can't even score – I mean, I think they can't score that amount of points on a normal defense, and Pittsburgh is a better-than-average defense, even without Polamalu. So I see the Jets putting up 13, possibly, something like that. And I see the Steelers putting up 28 or 31. I really see this game as a blowout.
The thing is, I think you're discrediting. I can see Stephen Hill possibly catching a bomb deep, getting behind that Steelers secondary without Troy, beating the safety on a high post.
Marius Thomas style?
Yeah, a little play action. I could see Stephen Hill catching a little, 40-yard bomb and running one into the end zone. So we'll see what happens. Either way, I think the Steelers will bounce back. They'll be 1-1, and so will the Jets. So now we got our third game. We got the Buccaneers coming up north to the defending Super Bowl champions of the NFL, the New York Giants.
At MetLife Stadium.
Yes, MetLife with Snoopy. I heard Snoopy was at the 50-yard line. What's up?
Snoopy at the
Metal. So your take, well, go ahead, break it down for us. What are you thinking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New York Giants?
So I think that the Giants are going to win the game, but it's going to be closer than people think. I mean, I've been predicting a lot of blowouts this week, but I think the Giants are going to be in a tight match. I think that ultimately that they'll win the home field advantage. I think that Eli is clutch in the fourth quarter, but I think that Josh Freeman and the receiving core that they have and Vincent Jackson, and now that they have some more depth at running back, I like their
and Mike Williams. Mike Williams.
Yeah, and Mike Williams, yeah, sure. And I like their rookie running back that they got.
Doug Martin.
Yeah, Doug Martin, I think he's a player. I mean, he went out and took LeGarrette Blount's spot real quick. So I think that Tampa's good. I think they're good. They'll move the ball a little bit. They'll score a little bit. I think ultimately the Giants are going to have an up-and-down season. So I think they lost the first game. They'll win this game. Again, I predicted the Giants to be 8-8. Everybody thought they'd have a great season. I think they'll be sort of a Jekyll and Hyde team. I think they'll come put it together this game, especially in the second half, and I think they'll win a close game.
Well, this is a game where you have to be careful, and I think the Giants will be careful. But I agree with you. I think this Tampa team, even though they didn't beat a juggernaut on Carolina Panthers, it was a solid win. And their defense is much improved. It looks like, Greg Schiano, who's coming back up to MetLife and, be up in the Jersey area again, the coach from Rutgers. I think that he's got this team inspired. Mark Barron is a beast. He was laying some wood last week on Cats, knocked the snot out of Steve Smith. And Steve Smith got up and was acting all tough, but Barron knocked him like, yo, what's up, veteran? It's rookie time. This is the Bama way. He knocked him like crazy, I'm telling you, Ray. But I think that you could see something like 23-17. I think the Giants will pull it out. Victor Cruz is not going to drop three balls. I think Hakeem Nicks, rested a little bit in practice and, is fine. And I just think the Giants, they find a way to do it. And I think the rookie, David Wilson, will have a factor. I think he'll get some carries and get his confidence back. He won't fumble and really help spark that offense because the kid's got talent, and he's going to be a nice change of speed and style from Bradshaw, which I think, I think they need that. So I think the Giants win and pull it out. And, and we could talk about a little fantasy football along the way here, and I can see and tell people, I think, hey, obviously you're going to play your Vincent Jacksons, your Victor Cruz and Nixes. I think Mike Williams might be a good play just because the Giants' secondary isn't so great. And I think Doug Martin, who, get some yards but also catch some screen passes, is a good play. What do you think about these two defenses, T? If you, in fantasy, which one would you play or not play, depending on what you had?
Between the Tampa and the Giants?
Yeah, or even if you, Steelers, Jets, or Ravens, Eagles,
do
you think you would?
I say that because, on my fantasy teams, I actually have the Bears and I have the Jets, and the Giants in a few fantasy leagues. So I think all of those are interesting plays, right? I think the Jets is the one I'm most worried about because Darrell Revis not being there and Pittsburgh putting it together. Chicago I sat, but they ended up on a fantasy basis doing okay. They only gave up 16 points. They picked up Rodgers once. He didn't really light them up. Speaking of fantasy, though, we do have an email from our boy from New York, Meech.
Meech is in the house.
Yeah, Meech is in the house. So he had a question on this topic, and he asked, he's got the Jets defense, and he says, all right, if I need to pick up a D to complement the Jets on the bye weeks or on weeks where the Jets have a bad matchup, what do you think about Seattle's defense? Because they're out there in his league.
Right, and I actually think Seattle is a great defense. I mean, obviously, they have a tough schedule early on, playing the Cowboys this week. I'd rather probably play them at home against Dallas than I would the Jets against the Steelers without Revis. So it would be a good time to pick them up and play them. But then next week they play Monday night against the Packers. So after that, though, the Seahawks, they're going to have the Rams. They're going to have Arizona again, the Rams twice.
Right.
They're going to have the Bills. You know, they're going to have Miami. So I really feel that the Seahawks, they have a good, great secondary. I think the defensive line's improved, and I like their defense.
Jim
I think
Chancellor,
they create turnovers.
Your boy.
Yeah, no, Chancellor is a beast, man. He really is a beast. So, you know, I would pick up the Seahawks defense.
All right, we got another email from our boy Bart.
Yeah, big Bart. Keep emailing us, man. Ray@rayandtatetoday@gmail.com. I love it.
Yeah, and he's got a question, and this relates to our first game that we reviewed. He said, "Would you play Vic or Schaub this week?" So just to let our listeners know, obviously, Vic is playing Philadelphia.
At home.
And then
he's playing
Schaub
Baltimore.
Is playing Jacksonville.
He's playing against
playing
Baltimore's
Baltimore.
Defense.
Right, and Houston is playing Jacksonville. So Schaub is playing
at Jacksonville. Right. I would definitely go with Schaub, even though Vic, I think, could have a good game against the Ravens and probably, you know, get a touchdown or two, maybe 300 yards, 30 yards rushing. You just don't know what turnovers he can get. You know, he could get two or three because you got Ed Reed and those boys. But I think Schaub could wind up having a big game against Jacksonville. Jacksonville's pretty tough against the run, so Foster might not go crazy, and they might have to really pass to Owen Daniels 5-6 times, Andre Johnson 5 or 6, and some of the other receivers, Kevin Walter, the young kid, Keyshawn Martin. So I think the Texans, I would go with Schaub. Definitely Schaub should have a big game.
I agree with that. And I think also Schaub is kind of a steady, sure thing. I mean, I got to believe Schaub will get you 275, 300, 325, maybe a couple touchdowns, whereas Vic, I don't know. I don't know what Vic will get you. And depending on your league and depending on your scoring, you know, Vic did well statistically last week. He did have his 312 yards, and but he had 4 interceptions. So I don't know how those interceptions and how those turnovers cost you in your league. But I think Schaub is more of a sure thing. I mean, Vic, you know, Vic could always put up that, like, that Monday night performance that he is coming out party second
well,
time
Well, not
around.
Against Baltimore.
He won't do it against Baltimore, but he's capable of it, I guess is my
oh,
point.
Yeah, gosh.
But I just think
capable.
Schaub is the sure thing. Schaub is steady. That Houston offense just matriculates the ball down the field.
Wait. He's steady B, but he's not steady B who
no,
got busy last
B.
night in fantasy
well,
football. He
I
got some screen passes,
busy.
Ray. Come on, you weren't feeling my man
busy.
Steady B with the screen passes?
He had 20 carries. I don't know if
that's
he got
incredible.
Busy.
No. He had a good game. He had double figure fantasy points, and he had a good game. But
I
the
would
fact
hope
that he,
so. If you're the running back on the most high powered offense in the NFL, and you got 20
yeah, but they
carries,
don't always run it. So I think it was a big deal, and it was against the Bears. A lot of people didn't start Cedric Benson. Some people did. Somebody I was going against did, and he put up like 11 points for them. But I think it was a good play in the sense that. You're not always expecting Cedric Benson to have a big fantasy season. You want to play him maybe as a flex or your third running back. But, you know, they had a good diet of Cedric Benson, but he normally doesn't catch any passes.
Yeah, that's
so that's
the killer
why I
in
pointed
our
out. So for
if
him catching
PPR
3 or 4
league,
passes, it was huge, you know, for him. So.
Yeah, if you have a PPR league, he's not your man.
No, but he was last night, baby.
That he'd be. All right, let's move on. We've got our fourth
the Sunday
game
night
of the week,
matchup,
which may be the best game of the week, is
Woo.
Detroit at San Francisco. What do you think about that?
Well, number one, I'm tired of people talking about the handshake bowl. Nobody cares. The coaches don't care. The players don't care. I think the media is so retarded sometimes, so we're just jumping off of that because we're part of the media too, but we're not stupid, so we're not going to talk about that foolishness. But I will say this. Two good coaches, two very lively defenses, just the Niners are a little bit better on the back end with their secondary and their linebackers. But Detroit's front four is vicious and ridiculous. I think Detroit's going to shock some people, but I think the Niners will pull it out. I'm talking like, you know, 24-23, 28-27. I think it's going to be really close, come down to the end. And I just think the Niners, you know, whether it's David Akers or a final drive, I think the Niners are going to pull out a very close game. But to me, I think if Detroit can stop and really lock down the running game, then it's all going to be on Alex Smith, and we'll see how much he can do with, you know, with Crabtree and Moss and Davis, and that's where it's going to get interesting.
I look for a close game. I think if this game were in Detroit, I'd feel better about picking Detroit, but I like San Francisco. I think San Francisco can't blow you out only because they don't have the firepower to put up 35, but I think San Francisco wins a close game. I think ultimately this comes down to Detroit and their discipline, because in the first game, Matthew Stafford was showing signs of, you know, 2 years ago where he was turning the ball over too much. So
he was playing like Jay Cutler.
But he did throw for 5,000 yards last year, so let's at least
give
him that.
Yeah, no, but still.
But Matt Stafford has toys, right? Again, that's another team that needs to figure out their running back situation. You know, eventually.
Well, Kevin Smith figured it out for him now.
Kevin Smith, you know, he's had several chances to be that, and they still drafted Michael LaShour and Javid Best.
Right, but it's also because of health. But let's see what happens. Let's see if he can put two good weeks in a row together, because maybe if Kevin Smith is healthy – maybe he, you know, winds up keeping that starting job.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately, if Matt Stafford doesn't turn it over, they have a really good chance of winning, because I don't think that San Francisco can run up the score. So if you take away those three interceptions from last week, and if he just plays nice and conservative, if there's nothing there, throw it out of bounds, take the sack if you have to, no stupid turnovers. Detroit is explosive enough that if this game is close and you got a jump ball and Calvin Johnson's on your team, you have a chance to win a close game. I don't think they will. I think ultimately the Niners win, but I tell you what, I'm scared if I'm a Niners fan to have a close game in the fourth quarter and to have the ball in Matthew Stafford's hand when he's got Burleson and Titus Young and Megatron and Pettigrew walking the ball down the field.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, fantasy-wise, which tight end has a better game, Vernon Davis or Pettigrew? What do you think about that?
I think it's Vernon Davis. I mean, I think ultimately it's a matchup. Vernon Davis is at home. The linebackers and secondary for Detroit are not as skilled and as good as their counterparts on the Niners. So even though Pettigrew is nice, I'd like him better at home on turf. He's also got three wide receivers that Stafford likes to go to. So I like Pettigrew. I have him on one of my teams, and I think he's a quality player. I just think that Vernon Davis is the man. And if his head is right, and the other thing that's going for Vernon Davis is that Alex Smith hasn't really developed a rapport with Randy Moss and Mario Manningham, so he doesn't trust them as much. So he trusts Crabtree and Vernon Davis. So he's still the primary go-to guy. And if you remember,
definitely Vernon is still the go-to man.
Vernon's your man from Maryland.
Go Terps! But I definitely got we got some good NFL players, the Terps. But I would definitely say this was going to be interesting is that Matthew Stafford, his stats could go down a little playing against his Niners defense. So if you have him at starting quarterback in fantasy-wise, you got to watch out for that. But for all you Madden heads out there, you know, we got to talk about this. Calvin Johnson hurt his foot. He returned back to practice. But watch out for this Madden curse, man. I hate to say it, but everybody that's been on that cover, Ray, has had some sort of injury during that year when they've, you know, played. Some people, it's been worse. You know, Fitzgerald and Polamalu that year, Troy was out and got really injured. And Fitzgerald had a little injury that year, missed like a game and a half or whatever. But everybody that's been on the cover of Madden.
Vic lost the season, right? Vic was.
Yeah, no. It's funny, but it's been every play. Look at Peyton Hillis. Peyton Hillis did nothing in Cleveland last year. You know what I mean? So it's the Madden curse for some reason is real, but I think if anybody could break it, it's Megatron. But then I hear on Monday or Tuesday, boom, he can't really practice because his foot is jacked up. So,
in a 16-game season, you're going to get banged up a little bit. And
No, definitely. It happens, but I'm just saying there's players who can and do make it through a season with nothing. So it's just a little ironic that everybody who happens to be on the cover that year – they have an injury.
I want somebody to turn down Madden to be like, no, I don't want the jinx.
Yeah, because of the curse.
Thanks for the honor,
because of the curse.
I don't want the jinx.
Nah, I think that would be That'd be kind of hilarious. So let's jump into this last game before we get into our last segment of the top five NFL quarterbacks of all time. We got the Monday night game. Wow, an old Super Bowl matchup with Elway and Chandler. But we got Peyton Manning against Matt Ryan. I think Manning going to Atlanta and to the Dome, I think Manning is going to have a good turnout. I think this game is going to be a shootout. I'm not sure if the Falcons could stop McGahee, but I think it's going to come down to, you know, Manning having to outduel them. But I just think Atlanta's got a little bit more firepower. So I got the Falcons probably taking this one like 31-27.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
I don't see it being that high scoring. I mean, I know both of these teams have potential to put up points, but I just think that both defenses are improved, and I think that Denver did enough to win last week at home against Pittsburgh, and I think they'll put up a similar offensive show, and I think they'll be better defensively, though, and I think that Atlanta will not be able to score at will like they did last week. And Matty Ice, shout out to Dave and Big Eyed Frogs, who had Matt Ryan last week, lost in fantasy by 1 point, and Matt Ryan had 299. So if Matt Ryan gets 300, he gets the 5-point bonus and he wins.
And wins. Yeah, it's definitely tough, man. You know, in fantasy football, when things like that happen, you know, the stats do matter, and it can drive you crazy. Hey, I won, but I benched AP, and I could have lost, you know, so. You know, no one knew AP was going to get that busy, even though I did say on the show, you know, I think AP is going to have a big year, and that's why I drafted him. Oh, and just a little update, Fred Jackson is going to miss a month. So he did get hurt, for those who don't know, and Fred Jackson's going to miss a month of the season. So, all right, well, we'll be back in a couple of seconds and jump into our last segment of the day, Top 5 Friday, best NFL quarterbacks of all time, Ray and Tay today.
Welcome back, Carter.
Well, tell them about our new segments. Everybody knows
right.
What it is, baby.
So again, Ray and Tay been doing this for 30 years, talking about who's the top five, who's the best, who's the all-time greatest, trying to
who's
put it in.
Who's your daddy? Who's your mama?
For all you old school, new school, whatever school, we try to be objective. We try to put everything in perspective. We didn't see a lot of the people that played in the 50s and 60s, and so we try in the early 70s, so we try to put it all in perspective. We look at tape. We look at reviews. We look at people who are knowledgeable. So this
right. I mean, basically, 77 on, we've seen it. You know what I'm saying? 76, 77 on, we've seen it. So
this is a passing league, and last year we had three guys go for 5,000 yards. Pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
And yet, the one who won the MVP, Aaron Rodgers, didn't throw for 5,000 yards, but he had a phenomenal
year. Had a crazy year.
Yeah, what was that, 45 touchdowns and 6 interceptions.
Oh,
it was crazy. So
yeah.
So he deserved MVP, no problem, 15-1 season. But it always gets us thinking. You've got each of those five quarterbacks, and then you throw Peyton Manning in the mix. You say, wow, we got a good crop of quarterbacks these days. Where do they rank in the all-time annals of football? So let's talk about your top five.
Well, let's just talk about the top
all
five
time.
All time. Yeah,
of
not necessarily the guys rank.
Yeah, so why don't you start us off and let us know what you think, and why don't you go 5-1?
Yeah, well, for me, I got to say that, well, why don't we do, you know, my five, then your five back and forth like that.
Okay.
So for me, at five, you know, God, there's so many guys, and I guess we could even mention the honorable mentions and stuff like that. But for me, I got to go with my man in Denver, the Orange Crush. I've never seen anybody with the cannon, the footwork, the will, the way that he just took no receivers, no team, hardly any defense to multiple Super Bowls. I'm talking about Jack Elway's son from Stanford, John
the general
Elway.
Manager.
Yeah,
the
man at Denver now, up in the booth. But to me, Elway, who's 2-3 in Super Bowls, and a shout-out to Terrell Davis, you know, we all know. But Elway was incredible, man. I mean, it was a pleasure to watch him. You know, he got some beatings against the Redskins and Niners and Giants, who were just great teams. But, you know, Elway was – he was special, you know.
Nine Pro Bowls. He won an MVP.
Yeah, right. Well, and the thing is, he did it with Mark Jackson. He did it with Ricky Natil. You know what
Ricky.
I mean? Like, he did it with little wide receivers, Sammy Winder. Like, his running backs were nobody amazing until Terrell Davis. So, I mean, I got to say that to me, John Elway is my number five.
Okay, he definitely threw the hardest. He might have been the number one hardest thrower. I mean, these receivers would say that they have welts on their arms and on their chest from catching his ball.
Oh, he had a gun. One of the best arms in NFL history, without a doubt.
Almost played baseball.
Oh, yeah.
But we all
about a Yankee.
Ultimately, he was going to play. He was going to play. And for those of you who don't know, he was drafted by the Colts and then threatened to play baseball.
The Baltimore Colts.
The old school
Baltimore
Colts. Before they ran in the middle of the night to Indianapolis, and eventually got traded to the Denver Broncos. Okay, so that's your number five. Who's your number four?
Well, no, you're going to do your five.
Oh, you want me to go with my five? Well, my five was a tie, but I have to break the tie and give it to John Elway. Ultimately, you'll see the theme in mine is that winning at the, especially at the quarterback position, is the ultimate tiebreaker. So I had, in terms of statistics, in terms of, you know, impact in the game, in terms of regular season, I had Peyton Manning, you know, ranked higher than almost all of these guys, but in the playoffs he's only 9-10, and therefore to me that bumps him down several notches. And you can't be a top five quarterback and be 1-1 in Super Bowls and 9 and more importantly 9 and 10 in playoffs. So I agree. John Elway is my number five, and Peyton's breathing.
Yeah, no, Peyton gets another one. He could jump up there.
Peyton needs to get another one.
And listen, and we all know Peyton, Marino, and Favre—they're all breathing on him. You know, those guys, along with Terry Bradshaw—they're all breathing. But this is just the special five. You know,
yeah,
we could do 10, but.
I got the same John Elway at number five, Stanford's own John Elway, number five.
All right, well, okay, well, then we go to number four. you know, it's funny because we talk about some of the old cats that we didn't see and this and that, and for me, I got to go to the original Baltimore Colt with the black shoes, number 19, as Method Man would say, Johnny Unitas, you know, so Johnny Unitas is and he's got three championships. You know, he was a little bit before the Super Bowl era. You know, obviously,
Earl.
Well,
he
did win one. They beat the Cowboys.
That's right.
But also, he lost to Joe Namath.
That's
in
right.
Super
he
Bowl
wasn't
three.
Smarter in those games because he came in because of injury. But yeah, Johnny U at the end
of
his career,
that's
the old
saying,
man.
Earl Morrow. You know, and that's the thing that people forget, though. He was a great champion, you know, before the Super Bowl started back in 66, 67 and all that. But as an NFL quarterback, you know, Johnny Unitas, we've all seen the highlights, the crazy, you know, crew cut, and Johnny was, he was a beast, you know. And you hear it from old ex-players, too. So, you know, you've got to go by things, that the stats, the records, but also what the best players who ever played, you know, what they say. And for me, Johnny Unitas is four.
Yeah. My number four is an old school cat himself, one Otto Graham. And for all of y'all in Cleveland and those Eastern Ohio listeners, if you don't know, go ask your parents about Otto Graham, because I didn't know. And I had to look him up, look at some tape. He played 10 years in the NFL, and he went to 10 championship games. So he's the Bill Russell of the NFL.
He went
to 10 championship games, won three of them, and I'm sorry, won seven championships.
Seven.
So he was 7-3 in championship games. He played from 46 to 55. Otto Graham gets a lot of respect from the people who know football. So, you know, while Fouts and Marino and Elway and all these guys are sexy, Otto Graham just went out there and won. And like I said,
and he was a big dude in those days. He was like a thug, you know. Otto Graham was a solid big dude.
Where they didn't protect the quarterback. They didn't. You could do bump and run. This was even, you know, you could
the leather helmets.
The receivers. Oh,
yeah,
sure. You could maul the receivers and the quarterback. So to me, Otto Graham, 10-for-10 in championship game appearances, 7-3, that puts him in fourth.
That's
place.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. So who's your third? Who's
well,
number three on your list.
You know, it's funny because number three to me is that guy. You know. I bounce back and forth between him and my number two, which I won't say yet, you know, but I really had to go with Otto at number three because that type of winning and consistency that you have to respect Russell for, you have to respect Otto Graham for. And he just, whenever I saw the highlights, you know, he was just a big stoic guy who just threw bomb after bomb down the field, and he scrambled, he moved around when he needed to, he threw defenders off of him. I mean, thanks to NFL films, man, because, you know, we have all that footage and
the
you see it.
The best thing the NFL's ever done.
Oh, it was incredible, you know, and that's why old boy got put into the Hall of Fame last year with that class.
Sable, yeah.
Yeah, Ed Sable. And, you know, I think Otto Graham deserves, you know, to be top five, and for me, he's my number three, a great champion.
Okay, my number three, moving along, my number three is Tom Brady. Now, Tom Brady has a chance, obviously, because he's playing, to move up this list. I don't ever think he'll get to number one, only because he's 3-2 in Super Bowls. Now, he set the record for 50 touchdowns in 2007 when Randy Moss and he combined for that almost perfect season. All you Giant fans out there, shout out, 18-1.
New York.
One loss going to the Giants. But Tom Brady, think about this. Tom Brady won 3 out of 4 Super Bowls from 2001 to 2004. Now, all of them were by 3 points, right? So they weren't dominating anybody. But still, a Super Bowl win is a Super Bowl win. And if it weren't for the Giants and their kryptonite and Tom Coughlin and really the defensive
line. And
the
defensive lineman.
Plus Eli Manning. Exactly. The defensive line plus Eli Manning and a couple of clutch catches along the way with Manningham in the NFC Championship, Tyree in the Super Bowl in 07. This cat could be 5-0 in Super Bowls. And if he were 5-0 in Super Bowls, it'd be over. I mean, you'd say this guy's the best ever. Again, if you go by my criteria where you need to win. So,
yeah.
To me, Tom Brady's number three, has a chance to maybe move up to number two. I don't know that he'll ever be number one because of those two losses to the Giants.
All right, we got to move it along, too.
He's the
we
man.
We got to move it along.
Who's your number two?
All right, well, my number two is the guy you just talked about, so I don't have to talk about his stats. But Tom Brady, to me, just edges out, Otto Graham for me. And I have Tom Brady at number two, 3-2. I mean, he can't be number one because he's not undefeated. But to make it to 5 Super Bowls in the way he did it with total domination, and Tom Brady has had nobody to throw to. Except for the year where Moss and Welker, you're talking about Branch, you're talking about David Patton, you're talking about just, you know, Stallworth. I mean, just bum receivers. And now he's had the two great tight ends. But,
Troy Brown.
Troy Brown, without great defenses either, except for in the early days when they won because of the defense and the field goal kicker. So that's my number two. And go ahead, your number two.
Yeah, my number two,
two
real quick, is Johnny Unitas. 47 consecutive games with a touchdown, 3 NFL championships, the black shoes, the hair. That's Johnny U. So I think we have those two flop. Who's your number one?
And then my number one. Come on, it's both our number ones. We're going to get ready to end the show. T, tell them we'll be back Tuesday. At what time?
Tuesday, we'll be back on the air for all of our fans. 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 4 o'clock on the West Coast.
Yeah, we'll be back Tuesday night. Next week, we'll be back Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. And, get you back to Rante today. So, all right, well, for our number ones, I have Joe Montana. 4-0, one of the greatest quarterbacks we've both ever seen. He started off back in, 79-80, beating that great Cowboy team and Randy White, and we saw the
catch by
Dwight Clark. And the pass, and ESPN was there. It was just incredible, and I call him Joseph Seppi. I mean, Joe Montana is the man. He's one of the greatest. He's had John Taylor, Jerry Rice, you know, some good, great receivers, Freddie Solomon, Dwight
and
Clark.
Not the biggest arm, not the fastest, but just got it done.
And he's from Notre Dame, you know. But he's the man, you know. I mean, what else could we really say about Joe Montana? I mean,
that's a great way to go out.
It's a great way to end it. You know, you guys have a great football weekend, fantasy football, Cats, the NFL games. Hey, watch out for the Seahawks. They might upset the Cowboys. You never know. let's go Steelers. Thanks for watching. Thanks for checking us out today at Ray and Tay Today.
We'll see you next time. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Talking sports with friends. Later.
He's a killer. It's that time of year, yo. Shout out to a lot of them.
I'm back.
Do you remember back in September? All the good times and lots of fun in September, y'all. A celebration in September, y'all. A celebration. Do you remember back in September? All the good times and lots of fun in September, y'all. A celebration. And it's September, y'all. A celebration.
Well, September's here and it's the end of the summer. Back to school or to work. For some, it's a bummer. For others, it's a new year and time to atone. Buy some new gear or a cell phone. Labor Day parade, what island is you from? I got my own float and I feel like number one. It's just raining, cats are just straining. But after the parade, you know we're maintaining. All the good times are here. It's September, y'all, and it's the new year. Party over here and party over there. All these shorties and the drinks in the air.
Do you remember back in September?